You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic family raising five kids outside of Boston, sharing the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, our adventures near and far, making sense of the world, and experiencing the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Well, we're back again. We've had an interesting week, haven't we?
Yeah, very interesting.
We've had a lot going on. So when we last got together here on the podcast, was last week, I was preparing for the camping trip the next day. So we were going, the boys and I were going on a Cub Scout overnight up to New Hampshire, the White Mountains, New Hampshire. And so, and we'd done all the packing stuff. So Saturday morning, we got up and loaded up into the car. We'd already packed the day before, and we headed out before the rest of you were, well, before you were awake. I think Sophie was awake, and probably Lucy too.
Yeah, but, I'm not an early riser.
No, but it was
so not a morning person.
I think it was like 6:30 we left, I think. And it's like a 2.5 hour drive. Plus I had to stop, you know, make sure we had gas and all that sort of stuff. And I took the van, and we got up to Clark's Trading Post, which where we would spend the day. And then at the end of the day, we would with the pack. It was us. They had a scouting day where they had, you know, special deal for scouts, for different, you know, all different troops. And then there was a special program put on by the U.S. Forest Service Rangers for scouts. So I'll talk about that in a second. But so we were going to spend the day there. Then we would move to the campground where we were going to camp overnight. You know, go back there. And then get up Sunday morning, and we're supposed to go for a hike, and then after that we'd drive home. So Clark's is one of those interesting sorts of places near where you have lots of vacationing, right? So New Hampshire has places like, you've heard of Santa's Village, right, Melanie?
I've heard of it. I've never been to any of these places.
I've never been to Santa's Village before either, but apparently it's bigger. So Clark's is this kind of funny, it's called Clark's Trading Post. And it's this funny place where, how do I describe it? So years ago, like 60 years ago, it was literally a store. It was a trading post along the highway in north into the mountains and beyond into Canada. And it was run by the Clark family, who were apparently adventurer types. I remember seeing something when we were there about how the mom back in the 50s was the first woman to summit Mount Washington on a sled dog team. I mean, this is, you know, that sort of thing. Very impressive.
Yeah.
And so it became a stop on the highway for people as they were traveling through. And so as time went on, they kept adding things for people to see and do there. So they had this, you know, people wanted to see the famous sled dogs, and then they had the dogs doing tricks. And then after a while, for whatever reason, I think they stopped doing sled dog stuff, and they got bears. And so they have trained bears there now. So they had a bear show, which was kind of fun. The boys loved it. And then they've added a couple of rides, but it's kind of this strange thing. There's a train that goes like a mile into the woods and back, just a straight stretch of track. But it's kind of themed. They have the Wolfman.
Like a narrow gauge railroad?
I don't even think it's a narrow gauge. I think it's just like a regular old steam train.
Okay.
And they have this character, this guy who plays the Wolfman, who lives in the woods, who doesn't like people coming onto his land, into his forest, and so he threatens the train and pretends to try to blow it up, and it's all very comedy and funny. And they have the conductor has the kids yell at him to scram, you old goat, and all kinds of funny things. And he's got a comical pretend bomb that it's like sparkles and fireworks and sort of thing. It's very campy and very, you know.
It sounds very Looney Tunes.
Yes, it's very Looney Tunes, and he's got like this motorized high-speed, like, tractor converted thing that he drives and up and down along the track to chase the train. And so it's amusing for the kids.
for the kids.
And then they have, like, they have a big water flume ride. You know, like, you ride a raft down through the twisty-turny water thing. And they have, like, bumper boats. And they have a Segway little park where the kids can ride the Segway in circles. And what else do they have?
I mean, rock climbing.
Oh, and then they had like a rock climbing tower, like a where they can, you know, they go right up. It was a pretty tall tower. The boys loved that. They went up and down that several times each. And that's about it. I mean, there isn't a whole lot more. There's some shops. They have, and then they have like antique stuff, like old cars and just old like junk. Like, look at all these old toasters from 100 years ago, 80 years ago. I mean, it's antiques. Like, I mean, it's an antique, but I'm like, it's just like these rooms full of antiques. Old swords and muskets and things.
They were selling them, or they
just on display. Hey, look at these ancient things, kids.
Ooh, look, old stuff.
Old stuff. It was just piles of old stuff. So, you know, so on the one hand, it's $24 per person to get in, which, like, this is a constant issue for us. Is every time we go anywhere with our family of seven, everything is ridiculously expensive.
Which is why, even though the rest of the family was invited, we chose to make this just a boys' day out.
Right. The whole family could have gone, but because of the expense, it would have been, plus, you know, that plus the camping cost would have been ridiculous. So, yeah. So on the one hand, the entrance was expensive. But one thing that surprised me was, so everything, there was no other costs to do things inside. There are no rides or extra shows or anything like that that cost more. I think there was like an extra, like a Segway safari into the woods. That might have been the only other thing you could buy extra. So that was nice. But also, like, even things like food and drink in the place or toys or stuff you could buy in the trading post was fairly, like, it wasn't cheap, but they weren't gouging you like most vacation places do, I have to say. I was pleasantly surprised by that. So all that said, I'm not sure I would ever go again. I mean, there's a few things to do. And if they wouldn't have the scout thing, I don't understand, excuse the pun, the attraction. You know, if there's a place with lots of rides and lots of stuff to do, but this was just, it was kind of small. I mean, it was nice. It was well kept, you know, wasn't cheesy. You know, well, it was cheesy. It wasn't run down or anything. It was, but it was just, I don't know. I just didn't, I guess I didn't get it. Anyway. One of the things I did was I let the boys, they brought their money with them, their own money, and we went into the trading post, and I let them each buy a couple of things. So Anthony got a stuffed bear, like the one of the trained bears.
A cute little black bear.
Yeah, and Ben got a tank, which was, by the way, he didn't realize when he picked it out that if you press a button, it makes shooting noises. And the very first thing he said was, "Oh, we got to take the batteries out. I don't like that." Like,
I am very much in favor of taking the batteries out.
We have trained them well to the no shooty, bangy, loud, noisy toys.
Yeah,
that's the first thing we ever do when anyone ever gives them one is we take the batteries out. But then the other thing they bought were wooden, like, muskets. Anthony's got a musket, bright green piece of wood with a little pipe on it, clacky, you pull the trigger and the thing clacks, musket. Ben got one that was a pistol, a flintlock pistol. And now, I knew that it could be a sensitive issue, so I told them that they had to leave them in the car, that not to take them out. So put a pin in that one. End of the day, we go get ice cream. Then we go back to the campsite at Russell Pond Campground. Now, this was a pretty primitive campground. Now, there were bathrooms with, you know, electricity and plumbing. So that was good.
So not really primitive.
Not really. I mean, I've been in even more primitive campgrounds than that. But it had hot water, which is good. But there was like campsites. That's it. You know, in the bathrooms. But there was no, like, playground or anything else to do at the campground except camp. Like, set up your tent. And so we set up our tent, which, when it's just me and the boys, we only have big tents because we have a big family. And so setting up the tents was just me and the 10-year-old because the 8-year-old is, you know, off running around, can't focus. probably more harm than good. It's difficult to say the least. We did it. We got it up. So, and we put my cot in. It fit pretty well. The three of us with my cot worked out. with the seven of us, I can't use the cot, but with just the three of us, it worked out. And we, you know, we had the whole pack was there camping together. And so we did all the food in common and all the stuff and overnight. And, you know, it's tricky camping with a bunch of Cub Scouts. Boy Scouts is different. Boy Scouts are still teen boys, so there's still issues, but Cub Scouts are still little kids with all the attendant issues that come up. So running around crazy, running into the woods, come back here, get out of the woods. They come back into the campsite and then go out the other side and back into the woods. We had issues of kids throwing rocks. Somebody brought an iPad, which was a frustrating, you know, to bring stuff like that. And at one point, Anthony got his musket out of the car, even though I told him not to. But nobody else seemed to object, and they were having fun, and he was having fun with the other kids, and nobody said anything, so I thought it was fine. So the next morning, we get up, and we're packing up. So, you know, when I'm camping, I get up, like, at 4:30. I just can't help it. It's light out in the summer. The birds are making a lot of noise. I just can't sleep anymore. So it's like I'm up 4:30 in the morning when we're camping. It's just, crazy early. And we get some breakfast. It was just simple, like juice and muffins sort of breakfast. And I'm taking the tent down with Ben, and Anthony's running around, and I hear somebody yelling at Anthony. I'm like, oh, what did Anthony do now? Like, he's probably, ran into the street, when there's a car coming or something. Like, and so I don't have any problem with that, with, yelling at him to, if he's doing something wrong. And then so now I'm over by the van putting the tent in the back when one of the leaders comes up and wants to talk to me. And I don't want to get into all the details, but the way the leader dealt with this issue was, I thought, inappropriate and over the top, the way that he spoke to me. And it got heated. He had an issue with the guns and simulated guns are not allowed. And scouting activities, which I was not aware of. And if someone had just said to me the first time they saw it, I would have said, you're right. And it's not supposed to be out of the van. I should have said something as soon as I saw you taken out of the van. I'm sorry. And in fact, I did apologize. I said, I'm sorry. But the way this person dealt with it was very frustrating to me. It got me angry. And it was the way that this person approached me was inappropriate, and what they said to me was inappropriate, and I was like, it kind of ruined the weekend for me. I have to say, it ruined the rest of the day. I was so upset all the way home and everything. So I don't know what to do about that. It's just frustrating, and so hopefully over time. Over this past week, we've had some meetings with the scout leaders. I thought it had been settled. Apparently it wasn't. So I'm hoping we can put this in the past and move on, because frankly, the kids love being Cub Scouts, and I don't want my issues with somebody to get in the way of them enjoying the scouts. So I don't know what to do, but so there was that. And then Sunday was Father's Day, but you tell me about your weekend. What did you guys do while we were gone?
Not a whole lot. We stuck to our normal Saturday schedule, except a little bit more relaxed. So the girls and I got up and had breakfast and made our way to the farmer's market. But it was probably at least an hour and a half later than we would have left the house if you'd been here. because I just don't quite have the get up and go.
Yeah.
And then we bought our usual, bread and veggies, and I got them all ices because that's their thing.
The Dell's lemonade ice, frozen lemonade ices.
Frozen lemonade and somebody got frozen watermelon.
Right.
And then we went down to the beach and they walked around and Bella did a watercolor as usual. And Sophie and Lucy and I picked up rocks and shells and crabs and things. Then we headed over to Red Eye Roasters for coffee because Sophie and Bella had both decided that, after all, they really did want some mochas.
Mocha latte.
Bella got hers hot because she doesn't like cold coffee. And so we got hers cold because it was a hot day, and she does not understand how you could drink a hot drink on a hot day. And that pretty much sums up their personalities really nicely.
Yes, it does. That is,
you know, including Sophie sort of incredulously chiding Bella for how could you possibly want that. And Lucy got a frozen lemonade. Not a frozen lemonade, just a fresh squeezed lemonade. So she actually had two lemonades, the frozen one at the farmer's market and a fresh squeezed one. And we'd picked up a little pastry treat at the farmer's market from the French bakery. And so we had those in the car, and Lucy had some cookies that we brought along for her to eat in the car. And we headed home, and we got home at about, I'd say, 1 o'clock.
That is late.
It was really late. And because we also had to stop by the pharmacy on the way home to pick up I don't even remember what we were picking up, something like milk, maybe. I don't know. And so then we got home and we all had like a very late lunch, which they were sort of hungry. But after all the sweet things, they were sort of not hungry. And the girls all took their showers. Well, no, the big girls took their showers. Lucy fell asleep on the floor while they were showering.
Oh,
she was really tired out, I guess. And then we watched a movie. We rented Mulan, which the girls all thought was wonderful. They loved it.
And Anthony, when he found out that they watched a movie without him, went into a tailspin because Anthony's the king of FOMO. He does not like to miss out on anything.
Yeah, he was pretty upset. But so we watched Mulan. Then we had a very light dinner. I think I made pot stickers for the big girls, and then we kind of snacked on some of the stuff that we got from the farmer's market. And then we went to bed.
What is it Sophie said about that day when she was remarking on us being gone?
The constant chorus actually all day long was, it's so quiet. It's so quiet. Not that she thought it was a bad thing. Mind you, she really enjoyed the quiet.
Yes.
But it was very, very quiet without the boys. I have to say that it became obvious that 90% of all the noise in the house is the boys. I mean, at one point, you know, Lucy was wandering around, circling, orbiting the coffee table, muttering to herself, but it was very much under her breath. And it did kind of get on my nerves after a while. I was trying to read, and but it was just more the visual of her going around and around in this sort of half audible muttering. But again, half audible, which is right. Very different from the screeching and screaming and sort of noises that are kind of a constant.
The simulated weapons fire.
And simulated engines and simulated like
screeching wheels.
Everything mechanical. Yeah.
Did you know land speeders screech when they take corners? I didn't know that. Apparently they do.
They do.
Yes.
So it was quiet, and we got up and we got to Mass on time, amazingly enough.
Amazing.
I was proud of myself.
Very good.
And then we got home and we did not have pancakes.
If I'm not here to make pancakes, it ain't happening.
Right. So we had muffins instead, which nobody complained about. And and then you guys eventually...
We got home like, what, around 2-ish?
Was it even that late?
Maybe even earlier than that.
I think it was more like 11-ish.
Really? No, it wasn't. Might have been that early. Yeah, we had to cancel our planned hike that morning because that particular leader left in a huff and decided not to lead the hike. So we did leave right away. And then I found the nearest Dunkin' Donuts to get some coffee. Because, you know,
very important.
Even in the backwoods of northern New Hampshire, the White Mountains, there's a Dunkin' Donut somewhere.
It's New England. There's always a Dunkin' Donut.
I stood behind three bears and a woodchuck to get my coffee.
So then you guys came home and we sent the boys to the showers to clean up.
Oh, yes. They needed it.
And
me.
And you too.
Yeah.
And then you guys.
We went to Last Chance Mass at the parish around the corner, where they have the really awful 70s music for hymns. Although they actually, because it was the feast of Holy Trinity, there was actually, they actually sang some decent hymns this time. They had, in fact, one of my favorites, How Great Thou Art. I, I was like, this is awesome.
Always nice.
Yes. And then we came home to a wonderful surprise because Sunday was, of course, Father's Day. And a wonderful surprise. We came home. We walked in the door. The living room was spotless, immaculate.
The girls did an amazing job pitching in and tidying up.
Yes, that had never happens before dinner. And then the table had a tablecloth, and there was wine, and there was stuffed shells.
And Bella had cut a rose and put it in a vase with some little frondy things.
Yes.
Very nice flower arrangement.
It was
very
really nice. It was really nice. And we had broccolini with tomatoes, roasted tomatoes.
Right.
Which was really good. And we had a ratatouille that you had made the day before, but because it was able to rest overnight.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Really awesome.
That's what I did on Saturday. I made ratatouille.
Oh, boy. It was really good. It didn't look like in the movie. Nothing ever. Ratatouille never looks like in the movie unless you're a French chef. But it tasted really good.
I'm pretty proud of my ratatouille, I have to say.
Yep. And the kids got me a Darth Vader Father's Day card.
Yeah. When we stopped at the pharmacy, Bella spied a Darth Vader card, which, of course, then we had to buy.
They know me so well.
Yeah. And so we didn't like do lots of like super fancy, but we had a nice meal and it was nice to have you home finally.
Yeah, we're both pretty low key about holidays, and people don't believe this, but like, you know, about the giving of gifts and all that sort of stuff, we're pretty low key about that stuff.
Yeah,
we have celebration like holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas. We celebrate, of course, and we give Christmas presents to kids and all that sort of stuff. But when it comes to like these other sort of ancillary days, we're low key about it.
Yeah, my family has always been pretty low-key about things like this.
Gift-giving, gift-receiving are not either of our love language.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not our thing.
I mean,
so,
I like getting gifts, which is very convenient. I like giving gifts and getting gifts.
Sure.
But it's not my priority.
Right. You don't feel like, oh, I've been left out.
My Mother's Day gift this year was getting to have a day off.
By yourself in the city.
Yeah, I took the train in, went to the Harvard Art Museum, went to a coffee shop, went to a bookstore, went and got dinner, and came home late. And that was
the introvert's day out.
It was perfect. And Dom didn't actually have to do anything other than like,
well,
hang out with the kids.
Hang out with the kids, you know, feed them and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Piece of cake.
So later this week, you decided you had had enough of staying in the house again.
We've had a very, very, very rainy spring and early summer.
Right. It's been nice, but this week we got a taste of the rainy spring again.
So we had a nice day on Monday, and I wanted to get the kids out of the house and go to a park or something. And we just had way too much inertia and it didn't happen, which is mostly my inertia. And then Tuesday was rainy. And so Wednesday, I said, I am getting out of this house. And even if I have to go by myself, but we really should all go, because I was looking at the forecast and Thursday and Friday were supposed to be wet and rainy. And I thought, we're all going to get cabin fever and it's going to be ugly. So I'd been looking around online, and I don't even know how I stumbled upon this, but I found the website for Mass Audubon's, Massachusetts Audubon Society's, has these beautiful little nature preserves all over the place. And there is one called the Daniel Webster Wildlife Sanctuary.
That Daniel Webster, by the way, the one you're thinking of.
The famous one.
Yes.
The Massachusetts, great Massachusetts orator and statesman.
And dictionary guy.
No.
Just kidding.
Not the dictionary guy.
I'm kidding.
Anyway, so there's this, and the descriptions of it looked really nice. Marshlands, river, pond.
Hills, meadows,
woods, and lots of birds. Marsh birds and other birds, purple martins. And I said, okay, this sounds great. Bella loves birding. The other kids enjoy birding. And I like it, and we like hiking in the woods. So this sounded.
And it's less than an hour. It's like an hour away, right?
No, 30 minutes away.
Oh, awesome.
30 minutes down the highway. So we finished our bare minimum school day, which is basically everybody do your math and do some copy work, you know, copy something out. And then we packed lunches. Everybody makes their own sandwiches, except Sophie was having a very hard day, so she needed me to help her a little bit. So I made her sandwich and I got her water bottle and stuff, and I even found her shoes for her. It was a really, really hard day.
Well, you did spring an unexpected schedule change on her.
I kind of had to scrape her out of the house and into the car. She wasn't really sure she wanted to go. But this is pretty standard for Sophie. She usually doesn't really want to go to new places. And then when she gets there, she has a great time.
And she's glad she went.
Yeah. And so I reminded her of this. Look, you don't want to go now. Once you get there, you're going to have a great time and you're going to be so glad that you went. Of course, that's what happened. So we got in the car, we listened to our current audiobook on the way there, which is a delightful four-story mistake by Elizabeth Enright.
This is the current audiobook then when you're driving without me.
Right.
Yes.
And I read the book to the kids a couple years ago and everybody loved it. The Melendees are a family with four kids, and in the first book, The Saturdays, they live in New York City, but in the second book, they move to the country. And it's set during World War II, and their dad has something, he's some sort of government consultant or other, so he ends up making trips to Washington occasionally. And they live with their housekeeper, their mother has died, and a handyman who does the odd jobs around the house. And these four kids wander around. They have great adventures, not big adventures, but the kinds of adventures like getting new bikes and having bike crashes and finding sleds and riding them and that sort of fun kid stuff.
Normal kid adventures.
Yeah. So we listened to a couple chapters of that on the way down. And when we got there, we started off with our picnic lunch so that everybody had full bellies before we started hiking.
Yes, you've learned a thing or two.
Yeah, I've learned that kids do better on full tanks than mostly empty tanks. Although it's really hard when we're at a new place to get them to focus on eating. So, of course, there was some tree climbing before the sandwiches were finished. And there was a little bird observation blind right at the entrance. And the kids discovered that there were bird feeders there. There were turkeys and there were all sorts of other birds hitting the feeders, red-winged blackbirds, orioles, cardinals, blue jays. It was really great. Lots of species that we don't usually see.
And so when you guys finished lunch, you hiked down the trails, like, so there was through woods.
So you start off in big fields and they've got mowed trails, but they leave the grass really tall on either side, and they explain that you have to stay on the trails because there are bobolinks nesting in the high grasses.
Bobolinks? What's a bobolink?
They're related to red-winged blackbirds and thrushes. They're a small blackbird with a very yellow patch on the nape of its neck and white patches on its back and wings. Very attractive, and they have a beautiful song. So we've never seen them before. This was a totally new species for me. And on our way back to the car, suddenly Bella and I heard this beautiful bird song. I said, "What on earth is that?" And we saw these birds flying up out of the grasses, blackbirds with these white patches and yellow patches. And I thought, I've never seen that before. It's not a red-winged blackbird. And We couldn't find it in our bird book while we were walking, but after we got home, we made the identification and realized they were the bobolinks that we'd read about in the guidebook.
Ooh, cool.
So very cool.
And then you also saw they had like a barn for swallow nests?
Actually, it was an observation blind, another one. They had these little wooden like huts, cabins with windows. And so you go in and you're kind of hidden from the birds so that you can observe them. And this particular one was looking out onto a swampland. But as soon as we walked in, we heard this rustling and we looked up and there were barn swallow nests up in the rafters, I think about five nests. And so as we sat there, I said, okay, be very still and be very quiet because these mama and daddy birds want to come in and feed their babies. And we could look up into the nests and see the little yellow beaks of the babies sticking out. And so as we sat there, these parents, some of the parents were very nervous and they kind of would fly at the window and then veer off as soon as they saw us and then go like sit on a branch over the water and kind of twitter like, can you believe these people? What are these people doing there? Why are they in our way? But then some of them, they started to come in and feed the babies. And so we could see the parents flying up into the rafters and perching at the edge of these nests and popping food into the baby mouth. It was really cool. Sophie could have said she could have stayed there all day. And I think Bella could have, too. The younger ones, after a while, got a little bit restless.
Bored.
although they all were all very excited to see these swallows.
Right. But once they've seen the baby swallows for a little bit, they're ready to go see what's new.
And Sophie was blessed by one of the swallows. So on our way out, we had to pick some leaves and wipe her foot off.
Blessed is a nice way to put it. Yes.
Well, in some places, it's considered good luck to have birds poop on you.
Well, OK. I've had very lucky cars in the city.
So we also saw an oriole nest, which was really cool. It's like almost a basket sort of thing that they weave in between branches. And it was hanging down really low at my eye level, which was a little bit high for the kids, but I kind of picked them up so they could look at it. And when I pulled the branch down just a wee bit and peeked inside, I saw the little babies. And we're pretty sure it was an oriole nest because both the mama and the daddy were hopping around in the tree above us, squawking at us. They were not happy with us being close to the nest. And so after we all had a little peek, we hurried away so that the parents could feed the babies. And we saw them darting down and checking on the babies in the nest and giving them food, which was, it was really cool.
That is pretty cool. So a long hike back and forth, and it sounded like it was a successful day in a nice outing.
Yeah, there were a few more trails that we didn't get to explore because by the end, Sophie was getting overheated. She tends to be.
She overheats.
Yeah, she does.
She's always been that.
And she was tired. Her legs hurt. Anthony was hot and tired. And so I divvied out the snacks at the furthest point we'd gotten to. We all had some goldfish and some snacky things.
Yeah.
Snap pea crisps, I think. And we hiked back to the car. When we got back to the car, we all shared out some gummy bears and then we drove back home.
Nice.
So it was a nice, very, very relaxing day.
It was very quiet here, that's for sure. And when they got back, they were so excited to tell me all about it. Yes.
I'm sure that we probably annoyed a couple of the other birders because we were not.
It's five kids.
We were not quiet.
Yeah.
But we didn't. We only saw like a couple other people. Mostly we were just alone in the woods, in the fields, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, the pictures were awesome. I kind of, sat in it to go. But yeah, they looked beautiful. A nice little place nearby. Cool. So, what else have we done? I think it's pretty much it. I mean, like we said, it's been raining, so we haven't had a chance to get out and do much else other than that.
Yeah, today we did the grocery shopping and we stopped by the library and got some books.
And this weekend we get the Scout crossover ceremony. So it's the end of the year ceremony where the kids get their final awards for the year and they rank badges as they cross over to the next level. So all the Anthony's a wolf and he'll become a bear and Ben is a wee below and he'll be an order of light and all that sort of stuff. So we're doing that this weekend. So I'm looking forward to that. So we often talk about what we've been eating just as an idea of what's cooking. And we talked about Father's Day and the stuffed shells and all that, which was really good. And we even got, what was it, Anthony to try the stuffed shells? He usually doesn't eat them. He doesn't like cheese. And, but he did try it and he liked it.
Yeah, I make plain pasta along with the stuffed shells just because the boys aren't usually big fans of
baked
pasta. Pastas. Yeah. But they're slowly trying new things, and sometimes they even like them.
Yep. It's my hope that they come along. It would be a great disappointment to me. So on Monday, it was a good weather day, so we were able to grill. So we'd been grilling so much up to that point, but we just because of the weather, we haven't been able to grill much this week. So I did Italian sausages on the grill, always a treat, although we didn't get to have the peppers and onions.
I promised peppers and onions, and then I totally blanked and forgot it.
Yeah,
we had ratatouille, which has peppers and onions in it, so kind of.
It's sort of the French version of that,
right?
Which is not the same thing at all. So then
it was multicultural.
Yes, on Tuesday we had instant pot shredded pork loin or shoulder? But
tenderloin.
Tenderloin. So, okay, so tell me about this. This is a genius recipe because it's like it is a chameleon dinner. It can become anything.
I love pulled pork in the Instant Pot, especially because normally if you do pulled pork in the crock pot, you have to cook it for like 6 to 8 hours. And so you have to remember first thing in the morning. And I am really bad. I'm not a morning person, and I'm really bad at trying to remember dinner.
Crockpot dinners just aren't going to happen with you.
I've successfully made crockpot dinners maybe like half a dozen times, and that's about it. But my Instant Pot, I can pull the piece of meat frozen solid out of the freezer and put it in like 2 hours before dinner, and it cooks up nice and tender and falling apart.
What do you put in the pot with the tenderloin, with the pork loin?
I'm never consistent any two times in a row. This time what I did was very, very simple because I was in a very big hurry. So I had half an onion in the refrigerator. I just sliced it really quickly and I threw that in the pot and I salted the meat. And then we had a bottle of cola syrup.
Someone had given us years ago a bottle of cola syrup from the Vermont Country Store as a stomach ache recipe for the
kids. It was supposed to be like a
remedy for the kids.
So like, yeah, medicinal home remedy sort of thing.
And which we never use because it's dumb. But anyway.
not really my style. If the kids have a stomach ache, I'm turning to something else usually.
Yes.
But Dom looked at it and said, should we throw this away? And I'm kind of, because
it's been sitting on the shelf for like 3 years. Right.
And I'm like, well, you know, I don't know.
Well, it did occur to me that people did put Coca-Cola in with meat, like hams and things.
And because we just had this conversation looking at this dusty old bottle, when it came time to season my pulled pork, I said, well, let's try it. Why not? So I poured about a third of the bottle onto the meat and then I added a little bit of water, and that was all the seasoning I did. I put it in the Instant Pot for maybe an hour and a half. And then after it came out, I shredded it up with forks and put it in a big roasting pan and stuck it under the broiler for about 20 minutes. I turned it a couple of times and then I poured the rest of the juices from the pot.
The broiling crisps the edges.
Yeah, it gets nice little crunchy bits.
Yeah.
Like dark crunchy bits.
It's all about the texture. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. And then we just served that on hamburger rolls.
I made a sriracha mayo.
With a sriracha mayo. Yeah. And I took a bag of the pre-sliced coleslaw from the grocery store.
Yep.
And threw it in a quick marinade with some rice vinegar and sugar and chili garlic sauce.
So a quick pickle.
Just a really quick pickle. So it gives the nice crunch with the...
But a little bit of the tanginess of the...
Sweet and sour.
Yeah, the vinegar. And then made sandwiches.
Oh, and we sliced up some avocados and put them on the sandwiches too. So good.
Okay, so I had my sandwich without the avocado first. I'm like, ooh, this is really good. It was really good. Then I put the avocado on. Oh my gosh. It was like, boom, over the top. It was that much. Just the texture, the richness on top of all of that was so mind-blowingly good. It was awesome.
And then we got another couple meals out of the pulled pork because
the next day, you come in like, what do we make for dinner? I don't know.
Well, we ended up having pulled pork sandwiches for lunches.
Yes.
Sophie and I actually took pulled pork sandwiches to our field trip day.
Right.
And then the next night, it was one of those nights I was tired because we'd been on this field trip and I didn't feel like cooking.
And it was the day before the shopping.
The refrigerator was almost empty. I had some frozen ground beef that I really didn't want to do anything with. And then we had this leftover pulled pork.
Wait, this was the day you got back from the bird sanctuary, right?
Right.
Because so you'd been out all day. So my idea was quesadillas. Quesadillas are perfect last minute cheese quesadilla. We had leftover chicken from a few days before, before the weekend. It was still good.
Like Saturday or something. No.
Well, no, it would have been Friday. No, Thursday? Not Friday. Thursday. It was like, but it was still good. You know, yeah. I'm not. It was fine. And so chicken, the pork, and then cheese for those who do not like either. I made fresh salsa.
Yeah, Ben and Bella had cheese quesadillas.
Anthony had chicken and pork quesadilla.
I said, do you want chicken or pork? And he said, can I have both? And I said, sure, buddy, you can have both. And he was happy as a clam.
And then in ours, you put the pickle sliced jalapenos, which were really good.
Yeah, sliced pickled jalapenos, the best.
Yeah. Did I not say that? Yeah. I said the opposite, pickle sliced. You said sliced pickle. But
anyway.
Tomato, tomato. So really good. Simple, quick, fast. So that was good. And then, Thursday night, it was chicken stir fry. Which is always very good. The sauce was really good this time. So you make the sauce from scratch every time.
Yeah, because of Lucy's allergy issues, it's really hard to buy pre-bottled sauces. They all have cornstarch and gluten and all sorts of stuff that she right. can't.
And we have to have the sauce with that's no wheat in it, no gluten, and then we can't use cornstarch and all that sort of stuff. So we just. But you've gotten the hang of mixing that together.
Yeah, and I don't really measure. I just kind of like. A glop of this and a glop of that, little soy sauce, little rice vinegar, little rice wine, a dash of fish sauce, a dash of sesame oil, a little bit of chili garlic sauce. And I think this time I used brown sugar.
Yeah.
That might have been the secret ingredient.
Yeah. Boom. A little bit better. And then at the end, I grabbed some of the Thai basil off of the plant we bought at the farmer's market a few weeks ago.
Oh, I also used fresh grated ginger this time.
Ooh,
that might have been the little kick
a little bit too. Yeah, so it was really good. And then tonight we had sockeye salmon, which you got on manager special.
Yeah,
is always nice.
Great sale.
And a Sicilian pasta dish that I saw from Milk Street Kitchen. That's the magazine TV show Chris Kimball, his thing. And they had a whole bunch of Sicilian pasta dishes in their magazine a few months ago or weeks ago. And this one was pistachios, because everything in Sicily is pistachios. Pistachios, mint, lemon. What am I missing?
Cherry tomatoes. Really simple, really easy, quick pasta so dish.
Good. It's all in the technique. It all came together. Had really good mint. Wasn't overpowering. I'm always a little leery of mint dishes because sometimes the mint is just like, ooh, it's too strong.
I always love mint.
I know. For me, it's sometimes the mint.
We have mint growing in our backyard too. So this was like fresh picked mint.
Oh, yes.
I braved the rainstorm and went out and got mint from the garden.
Thank you so much. So that was really good. And in fact, Ben liked it. He didn't have a lot of it, but he liked it. Anthony loved it. Sophie loved it. Bella, she didn't have much of it. She had a little bit, I think she liked it.
Yeah.
So we all loved it. So
unfortunately, there was
because
no
of the pasta,
Lucy
couldn't. Yes. Yeah. So and then we had a special treat after dinner for dessert today.
It was an impulse buy from the grocery store.
Lisa, she went to the grocery store hungry and she got Oreos, but not just any Oreos. They're Apollo 11 50th anniversary
special commemorative
marshmallow
Oreo
moon Oreos. So I recorded us all trying the moon Oreos I'll play a little bit of it now. If it all came out, I haven't been able to check it before we started recording. So if it came out, I'll play us trying it right here.
It is 2019, which makes it 50 years since the moon landing. I was less than 1 year old when that happened. And so lots of people are commemorating that. And one of the things that they're commemorating is by coming up with special things to sell. So today, Mama saw at the store, Oreo marshmallow moon cookies.
They glow in the dark!
Well, the cookies, it says, well, the cookies don't glow in the dark. That would be gross. Because just thinking about it glowing in my belly while after I've eaten it would be, it kind of freaked me out. But no, the package glows in the dark. So that when you sneak out here in the middle of the night to eat them, we'll know. So what we're going to do is we're going to try them all together, except for Lucy, who's going to eat her cookies. And we're going to all give our impression of what we think about it. So it says... Marshmallow.
Just open it. Pulse less, smile more.
I'm opening it. It's these darn Oreo cookie packages, which are not easy to open anymore.
Why do they have
They are purple. Anthony?
Yeah,
I'll use Sophie? Benedict? Isabella? Hold on, wait till you get...
I think I need a cup of milk.
Yes, we all.
Oh, yeah.
Well, are we going to try it before we get the cup of milk?
I don't know. Oreos without milk is just kind of weird.
Okay, it smells like an Oreo. It's kind of weird purple. What do you think, Melanie?
I don't know. I don't know Oreos, so I can't tell you.
The cream tastes a little, more marshmallowy than the traditional Oreo cream.
It tastes good.
I may have to eat a few of them to get the real.
Yeah.
So you're gonna sneak out at night and eat the Oreo cookies?
There won't be any to sneak. We're all gonna eat them, all right?
I know. We might get upset tummies.
Oh, I like get an upset tummy just for my cup of cookies.
All right, go get a cup of milk. So, what's the verdict?
Yummy.
They're good. I mean, frankly, it tastes like an Oreo to me. They don't taste anything different. But
now I can definitely taste a difference in the cream.
Well,
it's more marshmallowy and less like that vanilla cream that Oreos traditionally have.
I guess. I'm not as much of a Oreo connoisseur, I guess.
I mean, honestly, I haven't really eaten Oreos in like 20 years, but I used to eat a lot of Oreos when I was a kid.
It could be that the formula has changed like so many other things.
Well, it says marshmallow. It's supposed to be marshmallow flavor.
Yes, I guess. Why? That's like I'm kind of wondering. It's like, what does marshmallow have to do with the moon?
I don't know. Maybe the moon is actually made of marshmallow fluff.
Marshmallow!
Your cup overflowed?
My cup runneth over.
All right, well, let's go take care of that disaster. And so, thank you for sharing with us this opportunity to taste Oreo marshmallow moon cookies.
So, I think success. I think everybody, and like I said, to me, it tasted like Oreo cookies. You taste a little bit of a difference, but...
It had a distinct marshmallow fluff sort of flavor to it.
Yeah, and the kids were all like, it's Oreo cookies, so it's not the... So, and you got an entertaining listen to our kids eating Oreo cookies, and Anthony probably screaming at the end if I left that in. Because he was upset about the milk spilling. So that's all what we've been eating, what we've been cooking. I keep wanting to talk about the things I've been watching on TV, but we keep running late. But just a couple things I watched. I've been watching this TV show called Blood and Treasure. It's a new one. It's campy. It's kind of silly. It's about this art investigator, this guy who tracks down blood antiquities, with art. And he's teamed up with the beautiful art thief. They're tracking down the tomb or the sarcophagus of Cleopatra that some fundamentalist terrorist is trying to find because he wants to sell it or something. I don't know. It's kind of silly. But what I like about it is that it's filmed in Europe. So in Rome, in Spain, they travel in Europe. So you get to see all these cool locations. And one of the characters, one of the secondary characters, the friend of this art antiquities investigator, is a priest at the Vatican. He's a Boston Jesuit who lives at the Vatican. And they do a pretty good job of portraying him as an actual priest. I mean, obviously there's stuff that they kind of play a little fast and loose with for the sake of the story. But, he doesn't excuse immoral behavior. He expects him to be moral. He gives good, advice. He's a good friend. He talks like a priest. There was actually I was watching the episode before we started recording, and it was this funny thing where he's talking about, he's up early in the morning. It's like his friend is up and awake and doing his research for looking for the thing. And he's like, oh, what are you doing up so early? Oh, I have to go. I have an early mass, but we got confessions first. And this friend's like, who goes to confession at the crack of dawn? It's like, old ladies. Movement packs. I'd be like, that actually, someone knows what they're talking about. That actually sounds right.
That sounds plausible.
So Blood and Treasure, that's been interesting. On Netflix, I watched this movie a lot of people watch called I Am Mother, which is interesting. It's a post-apocalyptic thing where the human race has almost died out, and there's this facility that holds all of these embryos, and there's a robot overseeing it, and the robot births one of the children and raises it. It's programmed to be a mother. So this interesting idea. Okay. Can a robot be a mother? But it raises this child, and it's supposed to be waiting until the world is ready. There's obviously some twists and turns. But one of the interesting things is how they show the embryos. They are even as we have like Netflix saying that George's heartbeat bill, where you can't have an abortion after the heart starts beating in an unborn child. In Netflix, well, I don't know if we can make our movies in Georgia anymore because of this, all that nonsense. Even though they said that, they show an embryo with a heartbeat the first 3 minutes of the movie. And I'm like, do you realize what you guys are doing? You're proving the point. That is a human being with a heartbeat, not just electrical impulses. It's a heartbeat. I thought that was interesting.
The movie, a little dramatic irony there.
Yes, a little bit. The movie itself was okay. I saw it coming. I usually do anyway, but.
You always do.
Yeah. But the young actress who plays the girl did a good job. I don't think I looked her up. I don't think she's really done anything before. She was pretty good. The premise was interesting. And then it was, who is the actress? Not Tilda Swinton. I always mix her up. Oh, the other one who was in the boxing Clint Eastwood movie, Million Dollar Baby. Oh, no, what is her name? I cannot
remember. Hilary Swank?
Swank, yes, Hilary Swank. Ah. Thank you. She was in it as well. And so it was interesting. I'm not sure I would give it, five stars. I might give it 3 stars.
Okay.
So, Murder Mystery on Netflix is a comedy starring Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. Apparently it's huge. Like, it's the most streamed movie ever on Netflix. Original Netflix. People loved it last weekend. It was like 30 million streams, or I don't know if that's what is that compared to box office? Like, what is that money? Like, I don't know. But it's, they're a couple. He's a cop. She's a hairdresser from New York. I mean, talk about stereotype. Who go on their first vacation ever. They go to Europe and they get caught up in this murder of the billionaire and get accused of the murder. And so they have to clear their name while finding the real killer, blah, 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 while bumming around beautiful places in Europe, in expensive cars and that sort of stuff. It was funny. Adam Sandler was always funny. I don't buy Jennifer Aniston as, middle-class hairdresser at all. That's just not a thing. I'm like, well, you cool. You can, you hang out on yachts like this. So Murder Mystery is all right. So, have you been watching anything interesting, anything new?
No, actually, I've really not been watching anything at all.
Yeah, I figured, you've been taking a break from TV and movies and stuff.
I tend to binge for a while and then realize that I've way overdone it and then try to do something else.
So like binge purge.
That sounds terrible.
Doesn't it? You are an anorexic TV watcher.
I really have a hard time with movies where the next episode plays automatic, or not movies, TV shows where the next episode plays automatically, because I do not have the strength of will to hit stop when it starts playing the next episode.
That's what they're counting on.
Right. I am that demographic. And if I had to push start for the next episode, I would probably watch one and then say, no, I really shouldn't watch another one. But because it's automatically playing,
it's like you get 3 seconds or 4 seconds to jump to stop it.
And then you hear the theme music and you're like, okay, I just got to watch one more.
Okay, what time is it?
And then it's,
I could fit in another one.
Yeah, it's horrible.
What have you read, though? You've read something.
I've read something. Honestly, I've been kind of like scrolling Facebook and then falling asleep while over my novel. But I'm still reading Brideshead Revisited.
Okay.
Making some headway in that. I'm making a little bit of headway in Rosamund Hodges' collection of short stories whose name I am blanking on, but they're really, really good stories.
Link in the show notes.
I've loved every story, but especially there was one that had this great premise. It's sort of set at the time of World War I in England, but instead of the enemy being the Germans, the enemy is the fairies.
Mm.
And the protagonist of the story is a changeling.
Like the fairy people, like elves.
Yes, like the people who live in the fairy mounds.
Okay.
And there's all sorts of different kinds of fairies. And it turns out that, in fact, there is a fight all over Europe against the fairies.
Hmm.
And it's very scorched earth. And it's pretty intense. And I really liked the way some of the twists and turns of the story. It was a very fun, fresh, original. And in general, her stories all have just fun twists, like things you wouldn't expect. They go interesting ways. They have quirky premises.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then I started a book club with a couple of friends, which were reading. Sounds kind of dry and boring, but this is my geek pedagogy, educational philosophy and methodology. And so we're starting a book club, which is reading, starting off with Dorothy Sayers' Lost Tools of Learning, which is sort of a classic essay.
Mm.
And I know. And then we're probably going to read some books by American pioneers like John Dewey and Horace Mann, and I'm not even sure we haven't solidified our reading list yet.
Slow down, ladies. I mean, come on, don't go crazy here.
But this is
shades of pedagogy here.
This is what homeschool moms do for fun in the summertime, I guess.
Yeah, crazy homeschool moms. So we were going to talk about this week a topic that we were talking about early this week. Came up that our local convenience store down the street closed. They're turning it into a gas station. It was just a small convenience store earlier.
Closed for
renovations.
For renovations.
Right.
Not closed.
And they're going to put in gas pumps and expand the store and turn it into a bigger thing. And that got us talking about how much of an inconvenience it is, because we live in a subdivision that was built in the 50s and there's no other store here. We have to go a mile down the road to the center of town, to the big chain pharmacy, Walgreens, if we want to buy milk or
stuff
like that.
And it's not that like a mile is that far. It's just that because our town has two main streets,
there's always a lot of traffic.
The main intersect, and they're both state routes. So the main town square area is usually built up, and it's not that big a deal, except that we're used to having a convenience store where you don't have to go into the downtown traffic.
We've talked about for years that most neighborhoods in even in small cities, like when we used to live in Salem, they lack the character of that they used to, where they would have small stores that provided the basics, groceries, milk, the butcher, you know, that sort of stuff. There aren't those small stores anymore in neighborhoods where you can just walk down and get things. And we're expected, you know, if you need groceries, you get in your car and you drive to the grocery store. You drive to the place. We're becoming driving culture. And so we were talking about what makes a good livable neighborhood. What makes a neighborhood into a livable community? And so that was one of the things we talked about, right? I mean, so we live in it's a subdivision of all ranch houses that were all built around the same time, a couple hundred of them. And interconnecting circular roads. And so what would be really great is if we had, so when Clerks is open, they have milk and bread and, you know, like what are the other things they have? Like the usual.
They're kind of your typical convenience store, but with wine and beer too.
And if you need your vaping supplies or a bong, they've got that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. It's the nature of where we live nowadays. Or your lottery tickets. That's the other thing.
Lots and lots of lottery tickets.
So there's that. Okay. They've got that covered. But what other things would be? It would be nice to have a green grocer, like somebody where you could go and get, you know, vegetables, salad greens, produce, fruit, you know, a small place. It doesn't like that wasn't, you know, doesn't have to be a supermarket, just a place to go and get vegetables. I would kill for a decent butcher. Like a guy, like when I was a kid, there was a butcher in Norwood, which is the next town over from Canton where I grew up. And we would go there maybe once a month. And my mom would pick out a big primal, a big hunk of meat. Okay. Beef. And she'd say, okay, this much. And she'd point, boom, 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 steaks this thick. And she'd show them. Okay. Then this, I want you to make into a couple roasts. And then this into, I don't know, steak tips or something. And then the rest of that, ground beef.
Yeah, see, I think it wasn't like a local butcher, but I seem to recall my parents buying like half a cow at a time.
Well, you live in Texas.
Yeah. I think they had
people
maybe
riding horses maybe, at the end of your street.
No. but I think that they had somebody that they knew who they would occasionally go in with. And I do remember when I was a kid, when I was really little.
Your dad lassoing?
No. But I remember that the freezer would be stocked with
butcher wrapped
white paper butcher wrapped meat. And that was sort of like standard. My dad would pull out a chunk and throw it on the grill and that would be dinner, like steaks for dinner.
Yeah.
Or my mom would pull out a chunk of ground beef and wrapped in the white paper. So there was.
Yeah. And he'd have chicken breasts and, you know, you would buy whole chickens from the guy or pork chops. Yeah. And
we just got.
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing is it's a butcher and you have sausage and, you know, the whole thing. And it was like it was better in some ways than going to the supermarket, and because it was local, you could talk to the guy. He'd give you exactly what you need. I mean, how many times do I want to get, like, I want thick pork chops. Like, I want a particular kind of pork chop, this thick, 2 inches thick. You could get it without having to jump through a hoop to get it. I mean, I'm sure you can go to the supermarket and ask for it, but you got to, you know, call some guy from the back room to come out and do a special order for you. And it's just a hassle.
Not gonna be the sale meat. It's not gonna be cheap.
Well, that's it. Well, and neither will a butcher, I suppose. That's the downside of these smaller stores.
The thing is that we have 7 mouths to feed.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's a whole another part of it. But the thing is, so there was a time when most people walked. They didn't drive places. People would have cars, perhaps, but they didn't drive. They walked to places, and that's how they got what they needed. And neighborhoods and communities were built in such a way to encourage that. But now, sometime around the 50s and 60s, we decided as a nation that it was more efficient to put all the stores together in big stores in the middle of giant parking lots, and that everyone would drive to that, and that would like relieve the neighborhoods from having to have stores in them. And so that's now what we do. But that's just like now what we've done is concentrate all the traffic around these stores, and it made a hassle. Like, because one of the things that prompted it was the other day, I had to run out and get a gallon of milk. It was like just before dinner and we had no milk. I think it was milk. What did we have to run to the store for? There was some ingredient that I had to get that we were completely out of.
I don't remember.
And I had to go all the way to the supermarket because, again, the local place was closed. It was an ingredient I could only get at the supermarket.
It couldn't have been milk.
It was olive oil. We were completely out of olive oil. That's what it was.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so I had to go all the way to the supermarket. And, you know, just the idea of going into a big supermarket to get one thing. And it was such a, because it's always a hassle to park, to get in, to deal with the crowd and find it in all the aisles. Yeah, it's just a hassle. I wish there was just a smaller place. It would make it more livable. And I mean, we'll come back to this at some point, maybe. But anyway, that was the conversation we were having about it before. So let's wrap it up. And we've been going on for over an hour when we include the Oreo cookie tasting. So we'll give people a break. So that's it from us. So what do you think, listener, of what would make a neighborhood more livable? Or do you live in a neighborhood that you consider to be really ideal, livable for a community or for families or whatnot? What makes it that way? Or what would make it better? Give us your ideas. You can let us know by visiting sqpn.com/betts, BETTS. Or you could go to the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, where the show will be posted and you can comment there. Or you could send us an email to betts, BETTS, at sqpn.com. And we'll put relevant links for our discussion, anything like any of the books Melanie mentioned by Rosamund Hodge, that sort of thing. We'll put that in our show notes on sqpn.com. Please be sure, if you have not yet done so, if you're just listening by hitting the play button on the website, please subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or on the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should hit the bell to get notifications when we post new episodes. And until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.